The views and opinions expressed by guests on the TWBC podcast are solely those of the guest and do not necessarily reflect the views of nor constitute an endorsement by the host, TWBC, or the advertisers.
National championships, Confederation championships, World championships, major professional events. For over three decades, he has been there for many of the sport's greatest moments. And now he brings you even closer to the movers and shakers in the world of high echelon tournament water skiing. From the founder and creator of the Water Ski Broadcasting Company comes the TWBC Podcast. And now here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all, and high salutations to every single one of you that's tuning in to this latest edition of the TWBC Podcast. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot. And it's great to have you on board, and also great to have on board actually sitting across from me face to face, because a lot of my podcasts in recent times have been over Facebook Messenger or Zoom calls or stuff like that. I now actually have the grand opportunity to be sitting live face to face with none other than former world water ski champion Freddie Winter.
Salutations, Tony.
Yes, indeed. So, you've just come back from the Moomba Masters, isn't that correct?
Yep, I had a trip down there. It was actually a very, very enjoyable trip. I often sort of struggled to ski down there, so I sort of didn't do so badly, so I'm quite happy.
Okay, but certainly skiing in the Moomba Masters, I mean, it takes a lot to get down there. Not only with it with flights and all that kind of stuff, but just getting through all the formalities with visas and all that kind of stuff, you know. But you know, I mean, you've had troubles in the past getting into Australia. I mean, what was different now aside from the pandemic?
In terms of getting in, I mean, I think I was ready to get a visa. I kind of knew that, you know, that we don't live in the same world that we did maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where, you know, travel is just so easy. We're now with sort of, you know, I don't know, vaccines and various countries sort of not being open to foreigners. So yeah, I got my visa, and you know, that was, you sort of mentioned how hard it is to get down there. It's the flight cost, it's the visa cost, and the just the organizational situation, which is not so easy. But also, you know, just like any year going to Moomba, you got basically, I don't know, 45 days before you leave to go from 0 to 100, generally coming back from a long winter where you might be a little bit heavy, but or a lot heavy. And so, you know, in my case, but it was not easy to get down this year. Flights were expensive, hotels expensive, visas, all that sort of stuff. But I'm so glad I went, and it was just massively worth the trip.
Now, we spoke a little bit off camera before this interview, because I mean, not only is the flight expensive to get to, but also hotel and stuff like that. And you were kind of like lumped a little bit with double the cost for a hotel, because you were expecting to travel with one other skier, and unfortunately he didn't have as lucky a time as making it through immigration as you did.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredibly selfish of Joel Poland to not get it through. So I was had to, you know, pay the second half of the hotel room that we were booked for together. Poor old Joel had a rough old time. It was really sad. I mean, I've known Joel a long time, and I was actually excited to spend a bit of time with him. The lady Manon didn't go this year. She didn't fancy it. Just wanted a little bit longer of a time off. It is, you know, it's a bigger emotional commitment to sort of, you know, get going at the start of the year and to work really hard. And I think that, you know, we had a long season last year. So I wasn't 100% convinced I was going to go to Moomba when I had to make the decision in December, but, you know, committed to it, and she decided not to. So Joel and I were going to hook up and sort of do the traveling thing together, and staying in the same hotel and what sort of stuff, split some costs. But yeah, poor chap made it over, sends me a text. Oh yeah, I'm just arriving in Sydney. I'll see you in a few hours. So I call him a couple of times, you know, a few hours later, because I was trying to, you know, organize for him to be able to get into the hotel room without me being there. And I get a call many hours later saying, yeah, Fred, I'm going to have to turn around and go home. I've been detained. Detained, I guess, isn't the word. That's probably a bit dramatic, but he was sort of, you know, put in one of those places you go if you haven't been granted entry to the country. And then he was turned around and shipped back the next day, which I got to say, I mean, apart from all the stress of not being able to compete in Moomba, I mean, I just having to do 30 hours plus on a plane and then wait in a hotel for a day and then turn back around, absolutely miserable. So I was very sad for him.
Yes, indeed. And because it was a federally mandated deportation, he can't return for 3 years, right?
Yeah, but he, you know, I feel like, it, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm optimistic for him. I think it's not, he didn't do any lying. He had a, you know, maybe the wrong person at the door or whatever it is. I don't know the full details of it, but he'll be all right. I mean, I think the sad thing for him and really maybe for the Wolski community was that he would have done a lot of good at the Moomba Masters. I mean, the guy's an incredible jumper, an incredible tricker, and a you know, very, very good slalom skier. And I reckon he'd have gone down there and pushed for 3 podiums, really.
And I mean, and he's generally good for the sport as well. I mean, any of you that have an Instagram account or do any kind of stuff online, see him, you know, like plastered everywhere. So for him to be involved in the Moomba Masters would have definitely raised the profile a little bit, and probably as much as that little thing with Neely Ross a few days ago that went into the Today Show on Nine Network, right?
I didn't see that. I saw her in the Daily Mail, that absolute rag from the UK, which I thought was pretty disappointing that they decided to sort of, you know, take the angle they did with Neely to sort of, you know, to focus on. Well, they sort of said that she wasn't wearing enough clothes or something ridiculous. But I mean, you know, she's another one doing great stuff for the sport. And it would have been great for Joel to have been there. Yeah, I mean, I did text him. I said, Joel, I'm excited to see, you know, what you come up with to sort of, you know, take the mick out of this situation on Instagram. And he came back and he's like, I might not. I might let Lithuan lie and then just kind of crack on and leave it be, which is probably smart because he does want to get back in next year and he needs to win all those Moomba titles that he's, you know, destined to win.
Yes, absolutely. I did see a few posts afterwards and he was very, very coy with the fact that he wasn't able to make it to Moomba this year. But let's go past Moomba a little bit and let's try and give a little bit of a summation of how last year turned out for you. You skied in pretty much every major slalom event that was going on last year, competing in the World Championships, all of that kind of stuff. So taking all of those into account, how well do you reckon last season went for you?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting season for me because it was split into three thirds. There was the first third, it was 12 tournaments, basically. The first third I was really happy with. Second at Swiss, went and won Masters, which is, you know, second time. And obviously that's kind of, it's a dream to win that tournament. And the way it went down, I went and got a big score in the final and that was fantastic. And then Lake 38 was great. And and then I guess, what was after that? Sanjivazi. Like, so I kind of, the first third was really, really good. I think I performed pretty well. And then the next third, after sort of getting a weird little sort of, niggling's not even the word, just a sort of strange, what can be best described as a sort of armpit injury where I was having sort of tendons screwing up with my tricep muscles and getting detached and stuff. I had to take a month off mid-season. So the next third had four tournaments and I was not skiing well at all in practice. I felt like I was turning up, you know, completely on the back foot, underprepared and not really there to win. And I was kind of getting, you know, second, first, second or whatever. So then came into to the World Championships and I was skiing really, really good. Malibu World Championships, Mastercraft, Miami. I didn't get on the podium in any of them, having sort of been first or second for most of the tournaments throughout the year. And just really disappointed. So I was all a bit confused. It was an odd year because the start of the year I was skiing well in practice and skiing well in tournaments. Middle of the year, skiing terrible in practice, but getting the results. And then on balance that I should have been getting the better results at the end of the year because I was skiing my best of the year then. And then I just couldn't line it up, but you know, there you go. I guess that's part of being an athlete. And I think, you know, the level was high and I've got a few ideas as to why, and I've made some changes over the winter. And so fortunately I'm, you know, back on the podium, second spot at Moomba. So wanting to kind of, you know, stay around there and a bit higher for the rest of the year.
Let's wind back to Sanjivazi a little bit because that was the tournament that for the grace of whoever resides upstairs, you were actually able to get a ski on because some airline didn't really see the upside in you actually having your own ski for that particular tournament.
I've been pretty unlucky this last year. I mean, actually, they lost my skis on the way to Moomba, but I got there just 2 or 3 weeks ago. That was, who were they? Qantas. Good old Qantas. To be fair, they delivered them within about 5 or 6 hours of me arriving, so that was fine. But then on the way back, I didn't have them for 2 or 3 days. So lost them both ways. But yeah, San Giovese was kind of miserable. But I turned up, I wasn't so much worried about the ski. I turned up and I had this sort of pain in my the top of my tricep. And so I was sort of told, I had it diagnosed, and they said it could get pretty bad if I ruptured there. So I made a painful decision to pull out of the head-to-head round, before going up against Thomas De Gasperi. And that was, anyone that knows me will know that I'm not someone that likes to give up in water skiing. So
no.
that was actually really hard. I was really upset about that. But then I took a month off after that and healed it up. And it was a bit of a shame, really, to sort of lose the momentum that I had from the start of the year. But, it was all right.
Yeah, and you did say you're a little bit of a punny expression there, the painful decision that you had had to make on there, because absolutely from my perspective, well, I was looking forward to seeing you ski a little bit further on the tournament, and then the thing came through on the radio, and then you were on camera like saying that you just couldn't ski anymore, if you continued skiing, chances are you probably wouldn't have made it even as far as the World Championships at that point.
Well, who's to say? But I did enough to take home fourth, and I covered my cost for that tournament and got a few points for the tour, which was nice. But I just think once you get out on the water, you kind of got to be either go 100% or don't do it. So I just thought that Thomas is a hell of a skier, and if he'd have run, halfway down 41, I would have probably really tried to go for it and then potentially would have hurt myself. And then I could have been out for the whole rest of the year, and that just would not have been worth it. San Giovese is a hell of a tournament, one of my favorites, but it, not worth ruining a season for.
Yes, and San Giovese, part of the Water Ski Pro Tour, which you are actively involved in being involved with that entity. It's celebrated, last season was the second season, or was it the inaugural?
First.
The first season, the inaugural season. So taking into account what has transpired, from the start all the way through to the finish, how do you think the Water Ski Pro Tour did so far as being a bona fide series for the world's elite skiers to compete in for season end honours?
Well, I think I'd probably like to hear more from your listeners than sort of put an opinion out there. But I would like to hope, and I do believe actually that it took over from the elite system which preceded it, and it's very much based on. But the Pro Tour had a more visible and more marketed and more maybe understandable way of ranking the skiers from end to end, and I think that. Through the various communications, social media, the website, all of these things have added up to, helping to, along with what you guys are doing, which is probably the absolutely most important thing that's happening in water skiing right now, with the Water Ski Broadcasting Company, helps us, to build that buzz and contribute to that. So I'd hope that's the case.
All right then. So, Anything we should be on the lookout for whenever the Water Ski Pro Tour gets up and running again, because the first event is Swiss Pro Slalom, obviously one of my personal favorites.
Of course, yeah. Everyone's one of everyone's personal favorites. A very very famous tournament.
Yes, indeed. So anything we should be on the lookout for so far as the series is concerned going into it sophomore year.
I think it's going to be. More of the same, and then a few more things that are being worked on behind the scenes. We've got 14 events currently registered for the tour, which is great. Across the thing that I'm biased, but one of the things I'm massively excited for, which I think you'll share in, is the fact that we've got such a really good European series of events. Mm-hmm. You know, because look, this is a hugely US influenced sport, and the US is really the home of the sport. But it's really nice. Like we had Australia this year already, and then there's going to be five events in five weekends coming up through mid, I guess, end of June through to the end of July. That we know, and that's actually it's the most densely populated period in the whole of the season. So we're going to go late June. It's Cesena for the Botas Ski Pro-Am. Mm-hmm. Then it's then we're over to San Gervasio, the sort of the tentpole event of the European situation over there. Then on to Greece. Kaiafa is one of the most amazing lakes you could ever see. First year event. Then Norway, where actually you were there. I won my first under 21 Europeans there all those years ago. And then mm-hmm. and then on to the Jewel in the UK, which is actually really cool. It's going to be side by side slalom, four boy course side by side, and that's really really exciting. That they've got some, you know, new and innovative ideas. So we're going to see over 5 weeks. I imagine all the top skiers will come over for it, because that's just, you know, you can't miss that amount of tournaments. You know, like it's a great opportunity to go and really enjoy around the world. And I think that, you know, what we're so fortunate in Europe is, like, you know, you have these five weekends, you can really get, as a skier, you can get a real good spice of all these different countries in a short period of time and have a really good reason to go there.
Of course, during its inaugural season last year, I mean, the points system went through some tweaking, some modifications to take into account that because of the pandemic, there wasn't that many readily available opportunities for a lot of the skiers to get from one place to another. So by the time the end of the season came around, the points were kind of modified a little bit. Not to deny any skiers of any particular runners, but just to keep it fair,
I just got to ask you what you mean there, Tony. I think that it's a continuation of the elite point system, where just because people cannot, you know, unfortunately at the moment, there are the finances in water skiing, you cannot sort of in some ways in you know, in quotes, force any skiers to go to every mm-hmm. single event. So with the elite system, you know, if there was 10 events, you had to go to five or six of them. I forget what it was. And it's kind of the same as what it is now. So you basically now you can pick your I think there's 14 events this year, which will mean that, you know, it'll be seven or so I forget what it is across each discipline. But, you know, if there's going to be a few throwaway events at each for each skier, but you can take the best events, and that contributes to your score, which then is the one that sort of ranks you as opposed to all the other skiers.
All right, then. So let's focus in a little bit on you personally. I mean, obviously, last season challenging in a lot of aspects, you know, and you were able to win the Masters and then able to ski out the season type deal. Now, what do you typically do over the off season to get ready for something like Moomba, and then afterwards, then there's that little bit of a lull between Moomba and the next pro event. I mean, how do you train? How do you prepare yourself for something like that?
I don't have the definitive answer, that's for sure. But what I know is that when I come back, you know, like I said, a little bit overweight, underskied, probably taking a month off in mid-January, I try and ski a lot. And I've always skied a lot. Just to get my feet back underneath me and all that sort of stuff. And then I, you know, this year I took a slightly different approach. I spent a little bit more time in the gym. I've sort of more focused on being lighter, I guess, in the last few years. This year I'm just kind of going to be a little bit stronger. We'll see how that plays out. I'm a seasoned pro now at this point. I've kind of been doing this for quite a few years. So you got to kind of try different things to see what works. So, but yeah, I worked really, really hard before Moomba, and I couldn't have gone there sort of having tried anything else, if that makes sense. Like I knew that's kind of the thing that gives me peace. Like if I screw up at a tournament, well, you know, did I go out drinking that night? No, I didn't. Like, you know, did I eat all the donuts that I wanted to eat? No, I didn't. You know what I mean? It's like I you know, did I train as much as I possibly could? Yes. Did I do all the stuff off the water right? Yes, I did. So then, you know, if you screw up, then you kind of go, well, there you go. You know, it just didn't work out. So yeah, I work really hard before Moomba. And then, you know, as much as that's kind of hard to sort of, it's a fair amount of heartache, because inevitably, I mean, I'll be straight with you. I mean, 3 weeks before the Moomba tournament, I was like throwing my ski around, very upset with my performance in practice. I mean, I left my ski out in the middle of the lake for about an hour just because I couldn't even look at it again because it was going so badly. And I was like, man, I'm going to have to cancel this flight. I spent so much money. You know, this is ridiculous. So, but you know, you go through that heartache, and then and then you know, I've ended up here. You know, we're sort of 5 weeks out from the season, and I've actually skied quite a lot. So I'm actually trying to take a bit of a break. I'm trying to kind of let my body just recover. I've not skied that much in the last, you know, I've probably had 3 or 4 or 5 sets in the last 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks since I got back from Moomba or whatever it is. Yeah, and then it is going to be a slog this year. I mean, this is the most tournaments I think we've ever had in a year as a pro skier, to the point where I'm almost going to have to start thinking, well, okay, maybe I'm not going to go to that one. The points aren't that good there. The money's not that good there. Maybe I need to take a bit of a rest. Not necessarily something that's in my nature, but you know, it's not always good to drive your body into the ground, because there's big tournaments at the end of this year. I need to be able to be really fit for the Malibu Open, for the Mastercraft Pro, for the Miami, you know, King of Darkness, all that sort of stuff that's at the very end of the year. So I need to, you know, it's going to be more than any other year, me and all the guys I ski against, and everyone involved in pro skiing, it's going to be a case of pacing ourselves instead of going full throttle the whole time. There's this sort of myth that, you know, you've got to work so hard all the time, and that's the only way to achieve. And I think that I've learned more and more that that's wrong. The days off are as important as the days on.
Work smarter, not harder.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, I used to think that if I could ski 15 sets a week, then that would be better than skiing 10 sets a week. But now I know that probably 7 sets a week is better than both, in some ways.
Yeah, and I mean, I hear this a lot from other competitors. You know, I mean, like some of the elite top jumpers hardly hit the jump these days. I mean, they're out cutting around, cutting and passing, that type of deal. You know, I mean, and like from the jumper's perspective, every time you hit the ramp, you're just opening yourself up to more and more damage. You know, potentially. But if you go and kind of cut around and just try and keep your fitness up and keep your drive going in that regards, then that probably does more good for you. And I'm guessing it's the same way a little bit with slalom, where you're probably not doing like really deep short line passes, like going into 39 and 41 off, but concentrating on getting the earlier passes nice and smooth, so you're not expending that much energy.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, there's something to be said for that. I mean, I'll go pretty short most of the time when I ski, you know, at least once throughout the set. But you know, towards the end of last year, I was in Ski Paradise in Mexico, and I didn't actually shorten the rope past 35, like for pretty much the whole week. I think I might have had one go at the end, but I was just trying to, like, you know, align my body in a better position, you know, understand that I could, you know, ride a slightly different part of the ski, which would give me a better line to the next buoy. And of course, that's, you know, I sort of had to put faith in the fact that was actually going to help me, because it's not that enjoyable, quite frankly. You know, that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
But I think it's given me a little bit of something. I mean, I went to Moomba and I ran 39, or, you know, 10.75 in 5 out of 5 rounds, which I was just so pleased with, because that's not a particularly easy thing to do there. It's tricky. Okay, I didn't make much of an impression on 41, but, you know, to skiing in rollers, it's all about balance. You can't just be turning hard and pulling hard. So I was happy with that. And that seemed to be an improvement in my ability to deal with rollers. So that was really good news, I think.
All right, then. So yeah, you did mention Moomba again, you know, and it's famous for its current, you know, like a few seasons ago before the pandemic, they had the King Current come through when Thomas de Gasperi was skiing. That's an extreme scenario there for that kind of thing. Not a lot of people out there listening to this ever get to ski with flowing water going in one direction or indeed the other. So, I mean, for the benefit of the folks that haven't experienced that, how does that kind of manifest itself, you know, when you're skiing on the water? I mean, do you honestly feel that much different whenever the current is flowing behind you or ahead of you or that type of deal?
It just, honestly, what it manifests is fear. you're sitting on the sides, and it's slightly salty, right, at Moomba. So you see the boat go through, and then and it creates like bubbles on the water, like from the spray, okay, right behind the boat. And then you see those bubbles, instead of sitting there and kind of being blown around by the wind, they just start flowing down the lake, and you're like, or down the river, and you're like, what on earth? So it was really interesting. The first day, and this was actually, you know, all of the people I skied against and was having a chat with, they all kind of agreed. The first day that we skied was really, really tough. It was a big tail current with a bit of a tailwind from the start dock. So what's actually weird is you'll hop in, and this is what is something that only it happens once a year when I'm at Moomba. You get in the water, and then, you know, you're used to kind of getting in, and the boat sort of moves away from you, get a tight rope. But the boat sort of is moving away from you slowly, but you're catching up with it because it's a lot easier for the current to push you than the boat. So you end up actually kind of getting close to the boat. It's really strange. So yeah, in terms of the skiing, you know, there's a lot of other people that you could ask that would have a better idea than me. You know, Manon, for example, she always makes the final there. She skied there, you know, hundreds of times. And me, where I've kind of gone there and not always made the final, have missed out on a lot of rounds to learn. But this year I just felt in the first round, like with that tail current, it just felt hard to get wide. It just, like, you had the tail current, so it's kind of pushing you down the lake, but also you come in the other way and it's, again, it's pushing you narrow.
Wow.
So what was amazing to me was, on the first day, you know, you're trying to get anything past, I think it was like 4 at 38 to make the next round. And it felt very, very hard. And then that evening we skied in the dark and there was no current and it felt so easy comparatively. And then the next day we go out and it's a little bit of current, not as much as the first day. It's better, but it's not that great and it's not as good as the night. So fortunately for the final, we actually had basically no current. That was great. So it actually skis okay there. And, you know, we had a great boat driver. We had, you know, everything was lined up apart from the rollers. And, you know, it kind of, honestly, I was disappointed to not run a few more buoys. Maybe not a few, but I mean, I think I could have, you know, gone a little further, and I was a bit disappointed with that. But, you know, there you go. I second is all right. And I feel like I've got room to move into, hopefully.
All right, then. So, I mean, a lot of people listen to this and listening to you being a high echelon slalom skier that you are, who probably trains, you know, and like goes through like specific steps or things that you go through your mind, certain goals, certain things that you want to achieve in a particular ski set. I mean, that I've even seen instances where people get that painter's tape and put that on their ski and then write down there that their key points and that kind of stuff. Is that something that you do yourself, either mentally or actually physically do by marking the ski, you know, just to hit certain potential physical goals when you're out there on the water, or mental goals?
Yeah, funny enough, it's funny you mentioned that, because I have, in my life, I've seen people do that with the tape on the ski, and I've always kind of been like, well, that's bloody weird. But actually, I did it this year. Like, in my sort of, you know, disastrous state before Moomba, I'm like, okay, I just need to go back to basics. You know, I was really struggling, and I went back to basics and just, you know, just all my little keys of how I get balance. Because, I mean, for me, water skiing is... it's not really, people get it wrong, I think, that, like, you know, it's all about the turn. Well, it's not, it's about the balance into the turn. I think that's my, you know, it's a strength into my onside, it's a weakness into my offside. So I just have a few key things that I'm working on to try and get more balance through my offside edge change, which will give me more chance of being balanced and stable into the offside, so I can turn the hell out of it on a more, you know, consistent basis. So that's, yeah, those are my keys generally. If I'm going to have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 keys, that it's right there.
Yeah, because it's managing that load, isn't it? Whether the load that you take off the turn, the load you maintain behind the boat, and if you feel in any way, shape, or form uncomfortable doing that in each of those aspects, then your balance is all the way off coming into your edge change into the next buoy, and that has a cascading effect, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, I've got a big onside turn, and I mean, you know, it's really nice to have that, and that's kind of, in some ways, the bread and butter of my skiing. Like, I can turn the hell out of a 2, 4, and 6, but obviously the harder you turn, the harder you have to load in order to not get pulled back over. So you've got to deal with that. And yeah, if you just get compressed towards towards the water, then you're going to go straight towards the next buoy. So you've got to be strong enough to withstand that load, but also you've got to be, I don't know, cat-like enough to get that balance in the right spot, and to keep yourself, keep your weight over your feet, and continue moving out and in front of the next buoy instead of straight towards it.
All right then. So yeah, out comes out the painter's tape and the Sharpie, you know, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing that a lot, and maybe one or two people will just sneak a peek over the tip of the ski just to see what's written down. So what is written down?
You won't see me with it at pro events. That's 100% for sure. I won't be doing that.
Seen Chelsea Mills do it, and she still has it on the tip of her ski.
I know, but she, you know, and that's her choice. No, I mean, I think it's great, but I like my ski to look very nice visually. And, you know, when I'm in front of the cameras, it's got to look just so. So we're not going to have any stupid tape on there.
Fair enough. So, we've gone a little bit through top tips type deal, a little bit with maintaining balance. Now, there are a lot of people that are listening to this that are trying to get their boat set up for the season type deal, getting everything dialed in. I know you work particularly close with Mastercraft on their boats and their design and all of that kind of stuff. So are there any top tips that you have for boats owners to get the best performance out of their boats, to actually have skiing performances more conducive to the higher up ones?
My good friend Marcus Brown, he says it's very important to put 93 in your boat. That's one thing I know. 93 octane. No, I'm kidding. He definitely doesn't think that. He says, listen,
another 80 cents a gallon. Boom.
He's like just go ski, you know, go enjoy it. But I mean, I think that, I don't know, honestly. I mean, I would say just make sure that you've got your boat balanced. You know, if you're 150 pounds, then put 150 pounds on the other side of the boat, and that probably means that the boat should be balanced. That's the first thing I do when I get out of the water at any time in a tournament, in a practice set. I get up and I just see how flat the boat is sitting, because I know that if it's sitting to one side, it's going to have a funny wake, and it's also going to have the pylon, you know, slightly facing in the wrong direction. So I'm going to be getting, you know, strange whips here and there. So I'll often, you know, at the end of the, I mean, some of the boat judges that I've had in the boat for me over the years, they'll probably think I'm very strange. I'll sort of be like, hey, excuse me, do you mind moving over just 3/4 inch to your left? And they're like, what is wrong with you? But so I'm always moving people around in the boat.
Shift yourself half an ass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and then the funny one is when you have the boat judge sort of like, you know, standing up and then, you know, pulling the rope or something, or I don't know what they would be doing in between passes, but it does happen. And they'll kind of sit back down at a different place and you're like, hey, move back. I don't have a personality where I'm super, you know, overly sort of detail oriented and stressed out about minor things. But when it comes to my skiing, I do, which is not necessarily a good thing, because you can sort of get in your head a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I always try and get the boat level. If you want to hear the thing that I make sure I do every time, that's something that I definitely always do.
What about weight balance bow to stern?
That's front to back, is it?
Yeah.
Excuse my ignorance. As someone that spends many, many hours in the boat, I don't know that. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, that's not something I do know about. I mean, people like to throw 50 pounds of lead or whatever in the front of the boat, which they will say improves the driving and maybe takes a little bit away from the wakes. But you know what? I don't know. I don't know that. And I don't really want to go into it because it'll just stress me out, because I don't want to turn up. That's something I can't control. If I turn up at a tournament and I'll be like, hey, you got that 50 pounds in the bow? They're going to go, no. And I'll be like, oh
crap.
Balls. You know? So I can move a boat judge around. I can't do anything with that. So I try and it's best to focus on the things you can control and not get overly stressed about the things that you can't. So, yeah.
Unfortunately for a few of our friends out there, there are current geopolitical events that have gotten completely sideways, especially when it comes to skiers who are out of Belarus and Russia and you know other places around the area because of the conflict. And now they're finding around around about this date that this podcast is published, around about towards the end of March, that they're unable to ski. They can't ski in the event because they've been excluded by the IWWF from doing so. And I mean, I know that a few of your friends, you know, were like rubbing their hands and like really looking forward to the season coming up. And then a thing comes down saying, yo, you can't ski. I mean, what's your take on that right now?
We're getting political, are we? Okay, I'm going to choose my words carefully here. I think, obviously, it's a horrendous thing what's happening in Ukraine. No one is a fan of war, and Russia should basically calm the hell down, which, I mean, I don't know what the hell that's all about. And I feel awful for Danilo, who you've had on the podcast, and I've been in touch with him a little bit. And you know, poor chap is just and all the rest of them having an incredibly hard time. But you know, without being unsympathetic to that at all, I do think it's a shame that, you know, my friend Sasha Danilskaya, who's an old friend from university, wasn't able to go ski at Moonbra. I really don't think that her participation in or out is going to make any difference on this war. And I think that, to me, was, you know, I can get it at the top level. I think that, you know, should Russia be entering the World Cup in football or soccer? Probably not. You know, I can see why the Olympics didn't want him in, or the Paralympics, because it all happened after the traditional Olympics. Didn't want him in. Do I think that what's happening in water skiing is going to change the minds of Putin or any of the people making the decisions in that war? No. And I think it was an opportunity. You know, the IOC made a recommendation, not a mandate. And I think that was an opportunity to sort of say that, you know, it would have been nice for the water skiers to be able to go. I don't want to go too much further than that, but I was sad for Sasha. And I think that her participation in Moomba would have been positive, not negative, you know, skiing under a different flag or whatever it was. And I think that's probably just an emotional thing, because I really like her, and you know, she's the overall world champion, and she's an unbelievable skier and a very, very nice person. But you know, a decision was made not that way, and I just hope that it's reviewed, you know, at a suitable period, and the world changes to where we don't need to make these decisions. And I wonder if I'm going to get in trouble for even putting that opinion out there, Tony. So you walked me into a bear trap, but there you go.
Well, I mean, it's the thing that's going on in the world today. So I mean, and how it relates to our sport, I mean, is very clear. I mean, with the Belarusian skiers and what have you. So I figured it would be something, you know, interesting to raise. But you're here over at Bennett's. The reason why we're doing this face-to-face is you're here at Bennett's Ski School in Zachary, Louisiana, conducting a clinic with a great group of skiers. Some of them are coming from Kansas, you know, to have the privilege to ski alongside you and get your expertise and your take upon their skiing. Give us your take on how important something like that is in order for you to kind of, you know, evangelize, you know, water skiing and high level coaching in clinics such as these.
Yeah, I mean, I do a lot of coaching. I mean, I'm at the boarding school 9 plus months of the year when I'm not competing. I'm there, and you know, this sort of thing is, yeah, I mean, it's really something I enjoy. I'm here for Mastercraft and it's going to be a really fun weekend. Just arrived. And we're, you know, looking forward to a lot of good skiing the next few days. You mentioned, you know, evangelize. I'm not sure. I think that it's really important for skiers to, you know, get out there. And I mean, you know, try and raise the profile of sport in any way that we can. I mean, we're not, you know, no one's retiring to the Bahamas, right?
Yeah,
I think that if you know, I would say it's, I hope, I mean, it's in my nature to kind of want to be friendly to people and kind of go out and get involved in this sort of thing. you know, but I think that every skier that there is should do their best to promote the sport and to kind of do the things that are going to help it grow. And I believe that, you know, being involved in stuff that is promoting the sport is always is positive. And I mean, that we certainly agree, and I'm sure the listenership will all agree that that water skiing is not in the place that it should be. I mean, it is unfortunately ignored by the major players in terms of the media, and you know, and there's not a big fan base, which hopefully we're all changing. So let's I mean, I'm happy to contribute in any way that I can to get it back to where it should be, and that's, you know, at the front and center of the world's, you know, focus.
I was about to ask you that. What in your opinion is the place that where water skiing should be in, you know, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, you know, when water skiing will never, maybe I'm just incredibly naive, I don't know, but I have a feeling that water skiing could get to, you know, a fairly serious, you know, contender on the world stage, or certainly a lot more than, you know, that's obviously at the absolute, you know, maximum. A lot of things would have to line up for that to happen. But, you know, people talk about, oh, water skiing is so expensive, and water skiing is, it's not that accessible. Well, you know, bloody hell, neither's Formula One.
Or soccer, if for that matter, if you want to go through the pathway on that.
Well, yeah, but I think that is very accessible. And, you know, in England, where we grew up, Tony, like, you know, you walk out every day and someone's kicking a ball around. I mean, someone's always got a football. But I think that, you know, we'll never, those big sports, football, you know, rugby, cricket, you know, if we're talking on a global basis, I mean, that's one of the biggest sports there is, you know, through India, Pakistan, and all of that. And then over here, American football, hockey, and like these team sports, they're always going to be front and center. But I mean, you know, we've seen in the massive swing in popularity of Formula One in the last few years with just because they promoted it better, right? I mean, the Drive to Survive thing,
Netflix,
it's unbelievable. When you, like, it was, Formula One was obviously very big. I mean, it had a lot of followers, but you know, I was having dinner with the Fonts the other day, you know,
they've probably got Checo posters in the back there somewhere, haven't they?
Well, the funny thing about it was that Martina, who's, you know, I don't know, 12, 13 years old, she's a diehard Max Verstappen fan, which, you know, not everyone's right about everything. I mean, Verstappen is a terrible dude, but
you heard it here first.
And he got very lucky last year. But what's amazing about that is that she's so young, and she's female, and she's not, 10 years ago, she would be the last person that would be a fan of, you know, Formula One motor racing. But she is now. And so I think that this is a demonstration of, if water skiing pulls the right levers and does things the right way with, you know, a unified tour, with the right media going out, you know, which and great broadcasts, then we can be, you know, we're not going to be Formula One, but we could be on the way to being there. And we could certainly not be, you know, an absolute footnote, which is where we have been in the last few years. There's a huge opportunity in water skiing. I mean, like, with what you guys are doing, the webcasts are at a level where people who don't watch water skiing are watching it. You know, like, I have friends of friends who, you know, it's being passed down the line. I mean, I have a lot of my friends in England will watch it, and they'll watch it every week, and they don't know anything about water skiing, and then they'll get their friends involved, and they actually, you know, there's a bit of a following happening, which is great. But there's a product there which is good enough to support that. So we've got to do all the stuff around it to get people to watch that, and then it's just a Christmas tree effect. You know, or, you know, like, one person gives to two, and then to two, and then to two, you know, pay it forward. Right? Snowball running down a hill, all of these tired metaphors. But there's a lot we can do. And I think that, you know, yeah, when it suddenly, there's not going to be billionaire water skiers. But like I say, my belief is that in 10 years we can, you know, maybe I won't be at the very top in 10 years. But I believe that the skiers that are could be making really good money, and not just sort of getting by, and that's really good money for the 10th placed guy, not only number one and two or whatever it is, you know. Or like, it's hard right now to make a living in water skiing. I believe that, you know, if done right, there can be enough non-endemic sponsors and, you know, viewership across the board from non-water skiers to to grow the sport. And I think, you know, of course, on top of that, as the pro side of this gets more eyeballs on it, the sport's going to grow overall. So, I mean, it's like, it's, you know, there's two ways to grow a sport, and that's from the bottom up, and then there's also from the top down. So, you know, and this is more the top down approach, where the top of the pyramid sort of, you know, is shown, and then people start building more and more and more. So, you know, and that works for everyone. If we have a very highly functioning pro scene, suddenly there's more skis being sold, there's more boats, there's more memberships, there's more clubs. You know, all of these things are really positive. So I think it's something that I believe, you know, we can all get behind. And it's certainly my, you know, apart from competing in pro world ski, my big passion is to try and, you know, help us all get to that point.
The International Federation, should it take a more active role, or should it leave the high echelon portions of tournament water skiing in the hands of something like the Water Ski Pro Tour going forward, do you say?
Well, I think the International Federation, what's amazing about the International Federation is that there's some extremely dedicated people working very, very hard, you know, with the rules and, you know, helping judges get qualified and, you know, and drivers and all these sorts of things. And they create the framework that by which the sport is run, which is so valuable. And I think that, you know, the International Federation is partnered with the Water Ski Pro Tour. So it's a winner on both ends. So I think it's set up really well to, you know, for success now. I think that the improvement in the last year or so has been that there's more of an emphasis on marketing what's going on, instead of, you know, the list of the top skiers sort of living on a website that no one really would think to go to, and actually having it sort of pushed out and sort of, you know, pushed in people's faces a bit more. And there'll be more of that going forward, and more, you know, more avenues will be explored, and hopefully that will be to the benefit of your typical water ski viewer, you know, and so the casuals can become the diehards, and then we can make the people that don't know anything about it become the casuals, and, you know, just build that fan base. So, I believe in the system that we have, that, you know, we couldn't do this without the International Federation. They're integral to the whole of water skiing and, you know, and to the whole pyramid. The Water Ski Pro Tour is trying to promote is just the very tip top of water skiing. There's a lot of, I mean, the majority of water skiing is not at that level, but the grassroots and the people trying to, you know, run their 22 offs and get their score in a tournament or whatever it is, that's huge, you know. And the International Federation, like, you can't do that without a centralized International Federation. So that's what it's there for.
All right, redirecting back to you, this season coming up, 2022. Before we round off the podcast, wish us sincerely thank you for being a part of, you know, at rather short notice. But what are your goals and expectations for this season? I mean, what kind of lofty ambition do you have set out in front of you that you'd say, okay, I've done this, I feel good about myself?
I mean, I haven't started a season, you know, in a long time without saying, you know, I want to win everything. And I believe you've got to believe that you can. And there's been seasons where I've won a lot, and there's been seasons where I've won a little bit less. But last year, I was so happy. Honestly, I was so happy with how the first, you know, two thirds of that season went. Cause, you know, I was skiing well, I won the big tournaments. And then even when I wasn't skiing that well, I was still getting the results. That's huge. So the last third was a very big disappointment, but I think that this one, I mean, hopefully I've done the work over the winter to where I can be competitive everywhere. Yeah. We've got Swiss, we've got Masters, which is, you know, end of May, and then we move on to sort of you know, a few more different continents, and then we, you know, it's a huge year, and it's one of the biggest years we've ever had. So I'm gonna try and go and win everything, frankly. And, you know, there's skiers out there skiing incredibly, incredibly well in front of me, and guys that are coming up who are younger than me, and they're, you know, newer on the circuit than me, who are doing really well. So there's a lot of motivation, and you want to work as hard as you can, and I'm just as motivated, if not more motivated than I ever have been, to really keep going, and certainly don't plan to rest on my laurels anytime soon.
Indeed. Now, normally when I talk to people on this podcast, I give them the opportunity to say thanks or acknowledgements to those folks that support them going forward. So with that in mind, the mic is all yours in that respect.
Okay, well, I always screw up here because I forget people, but well, cheesy, isn't it? It's like, yeah, didn't Gwyneth Paltrow like sort of break down crying at the Oscars?
Or a Sally Field type moment.
Yeah, and you sort of, you just get a bit emotional and everyone thinks you're a bit of a knob. But no, well, mum and dad, of course. Yeah. Or dad and mum. I got told off by my dad because at Moonbra I said I'd like to thank mum and dad, and he says, it's dad and mum, Fred. It's dad and mum. So them and Manon, and then, and you know, who's my training partner, and the person that's, you know, the day-to-day person has to deal with me through all my massive stress about skiing and all the stuff that entails, but she does very well there. But yeah, you know, all the people that I ski with throughout the year, Ronnie Barton has been massive for me the last 3 or 4 years. She's just amazing and a huge, you know, support and a great coach. And then, you know, Steve Glanfield, of course.
I do.
Who's just a top chap.
Top banana,
looks after me, and I go and ski with him in the summer, and I always look forward to that. And he's got a hell of a ski place over there, which he's built. I think this is the 10 year anniversary of when he started that, actually, which is really cool. The Oxford Wakeboarding Ski.
I think I saw something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So I'll look forward to that in the summer. And then Dimitri Karunas in Portaheli. Well, I'll definitely manage to get to Greece and ski there this summer. So, and then my sponsors, okay, Mastercraft Boats, D3 Skis, Aid Crew, Action Water Sports. This is where I'm going to get in big trouble, Tony. This is where I don't like this. No, all the people that support me, I mean, this is, you know, it means a serious amount to be able to do what I do, and I couldn't think of doing anything else. So it's wonderful to have that support.
All right, then. That was Freddie Winter. I'm Tony Lightfoot. This has been the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. And so, until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.